because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, LeaderShield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Rhythm is a dancer, it's a soul's companion. People feel it everywhere. Lift your hands and voices, free your mind and join us. You can feel it in the air.
We're back. Hour two. Monday. Coming out of the first weekend of 2023. And that included, of course, the first point race in New York toward Derby, the Jerome. And a familiar, certainly a familiar face around the racetracks in New York. Michael W. McCarthy sends in Lugan Knight, ended up being the, you can't call him a secret or worst kept secret, but it seemed like everybody we talked to on weekend preview on Friday, it seemed like everybody agreed that Lugan Knight was the one you wanted as a price alternative to favored Arctic Arrogance, and that's the way it turned out. It was a good race. Rich Migliori, good morning. Chicken feed. You're out there feeding the chickens.
Yeah, well, I got all the horse stuff done. Now I just want to get the chickens done before I have to go off, drop Gabby at the airport, and everything's good. Beautiful day.
Well, and it was a nice weekend. Let's talk first and foremost. I expect Michael W. might join us later this morning. This group, and this is always an interesting time of the year when we, you know, start to look at the three-year-olds, and some of them are going to be stretching out, and the one-turn mile is sort of a kind of a painless way to make a transition from sprinting to two-turning.
Yeah, absolutely. Although I think sometimes, you know, we shouldn't overlook the fact that a one-turn mile is demanding because the race doesn't really moderate in the middle. That long run down the backstretch to kind of continue. And, I just think that horse showed a lot of grit, a lot of determination. You knew Mike wasn't coming here, you know, to see the Empire State Building. I mean, he's got such a good hand. He's such a good horseman. And, you know, maybe even more importantly, he's such a good guy. I mean, I really liked the relationship I had with him when he was working for Todd. Very practical, someone you could talk to if things didn't go right, or if you had an idea about a horse, a real horseman.
No doubt. And this one, a Golden Sense, excuse me, out of a Spitestown mare. It, you know, you don't necessarily know how far this one wants to go, honestly. But for now, this is a homebred BG Stables. For now, it, you know, three sprints, six and a half, and six again. This is a horse that, you know, that has been based at Churchill, and the maiden breaker came at Keeneland, has kept certainly very good company, and if anything, that victory formation that won for Brad Cox last week at Oaklawn, he gets complimented by this performance.
He is really complimented by this performance. And the one thing that both of these horses have in common, Steve, is, you know, even though they were stretching out off of sprints, they didn't run through the bridle. They you know, got to the front, ears kind of flicked back and forth, waited for the rider to, you know, kind of give them direction. And you can't underestimate how important that is for a horse to, you know, not do too much early if they're relaxed about it, right? What does Tony say? Not how fast you're going, how you're going fast.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that's an example of it. Nothing better than when you have a horse that'll throw their ears up, float, wait on a horse to come to them, and then, like, basically waiting on the ride. Okay, what do you want me to do now? You know, when I won the Gazelle with Flashing, I asked them to run her there, a mile and an eighth, and no one thought that she'd stay, but I knew that she would go to the front and her ears would come up and she'd come back to me. And she wound up beating Unrivaled Bell that day because she just got so happy on the lead and relaxed. And everything's more efficient. Their stride's more efficient. Their breathing's more efficient. They get into just a really good frame and they're able to sustain it and carry it. And that's the one thing I got from both of those colts, that they not only talented but smart.
And that's, you know, that's an aspect, the maturity factor, and, you know, horses, you know, we talk so often about horses developing and, you know, what they're doing from a development standpoint, but you think about that, you know, in terms of speed and the, you know, the performance figures and how they're ratcheting up. But, you know, in a lot of cases, I think, in fact, the experience of the Tappet progeny and how much discussion, and actually even before Tappet, Rich, Stormcat, and you know, for so long the discussions about, you know, a horse's mental makeup and maturity and how they, you know, how they have to level out at a certain point if they're going to be successful.
Well, you know, I having had the privilege to ride Stormcat to his last win, he was tricky in that he would want to do too much, and then when he'd get clear, he'd pull himself up, and he, you know, he'd lose his focus. And obviously, he was high strung; he could run hot, and you know that's why I think Jonathan Shepherd having him on the farm, basically training him off the farm in Pennsylvania, probably led to him having a racing career at all. I mean, you know, it's funny. I went to ride him at the Meadowlands. Graham Motion was the assistant.
Hmm.
And it was 6 furlongs, hard-hitting sprinters when they used to go 21-44 at the Meadowlands. And Jonathan says to me in the paddock, "Richard, I want you to stop him first step. Stop him first step. I'll be in Passaic and they'll be in Hoboken." I mean, so I just said, well, I'll just break quiet. Well, he was running off with me the first 16th of a mile, two in front, before I finally got him back and was able to hide him behind two horses, and then he won with his ears up. But, you know, when you hear somebody say, stop them first step, especially back then at the Meadowlands, you're like, nah, this is crazy. Well, he was right. I was wrong.
I love it. This race, let's kind of dive in. Michael's going to join us after Christophe Clement later. As well, so look for Michael W at about, I don't know, 10 of 11 or so. The way in which he dug in, I thought, late, you know, Arctic Arrogance, I don't blame Lescano for, you know, basically just attending the pace and not, you know, not really attacking. I mean, what would he have had to have done differently to get by Lugan Knight?
I don't think he could have done anything.
No, I didn't. There you go.
I think he took it to him when he needed to. You know, tactically, his ride was very sound. You know, obviously, Manny Franco was just absolutely on fire this past week, but it shouldn't go unnoticed how consistently well Jose Lescano's been riding all year. I mean, for over a year. He went through, I think, a little funky period going into maybe last winter, but since then, And listen, that happens to all riders. You know, you go through periods where you're going to ride better than others, and then obviously confidence is so key. If you're making the right decisions, things just seem to gel. And those moments when you're second guessing is when you're not riding as well. And so, like, when I talk about that stuff, some riders get very touchy about it. I guess I would have too when I was riding. But it's just a fact. I mean, every rider goes through it. Every athlete goes through it. You know, and usually it's more mental than physical. It's that you start overthinking and holding the reins a bit too tight, right? But he's been riding phenomenal, and I thought he gave his horse every opportunity. You know, it's walking that tightrope, right, Steve? You go after him too soon and set it up for someone to pick you both off. Give him too much rope, can never reel him in. I thought he rode the tightrope perfect and just came up second best on a horse that, you know, showed that he's not only talented but tenacious. And you want to know they'll fight, that they want it, that they want to be the herd leader. And he showed that with flying colors.
Well, Lugan Knight, little over, just a dime over 7-2, pays 9-10. Arctic Arrogance, it was the right price, you know, 6-5 plus. And General Banker, I thought, ran credibly. In fact, it just so happens I reached out to Jimmy Ferraro earlier in the day, because the more I handicapped it, the more I thought General Banker had a real chance in here. But the two, this was one of those races, Rich, where the top pair, they distanced themselves from the rest of the field. You know, the horse that kind of didn't really offer much of a challenge was Neural Network, who Franco kind of took a hold of early. I thought he must have thought that there was going to be a chance to run him down.
Yeah, I just don't think he showed up. I mean, sometimes we talk about tactics and they do come into play, but in this particular instance, I just don't think he really was ever traveling. He took a hold of him, but the horse to me never looked like he was showing that enthusiasm. That, like, I don't think he got into a fight with him. I just don't think he was there.
No, that's fair. And the other horse that certainly broke like he was going to be a part of the pace, but Andiamo a Firenze, off the break, just kind of faded back without really ever engaging.
Well, do you think maybe that was, like, obviously to me he looks like a horse that's just has distance limitations, that maybe they were experimenting, like, if we're going to get him to stretch out, maybe we got to change up tactics and see if he can use his speed at a different point in the race. I just think he's a really good sprinter, and maybe after this they'll go, well, let's play to his strength. I always laugh that trainers scour the two-year-old in training sales, and now obviously he's a homebred, so I'm not saying about him in particular, but trainers in general, they'll scour the two-year-old in training sales, and they got to have the one that worked in 10 or 9 and 4. And then they spend the next three months trying to get him to slow down. Well, you went out and bought a horse that was cranked up to go in 10. Now you want to take the speed back away from him. It never made a lot of sense to me.
I don't argue that. It doesn't, to me, same thing. And you at least want the horse, if you're going to get beat doing what the horse does. Yeah, exactly. What the horse does well. We're underway with the three-year-olds in New York, the Jerome. Let's mention also, we got a few other little topics. And I guess we could talk Manny in here, 6 wins on Friday, then comes back with 4 more on Sunday. And there was a point, if I added this up correctly, right, I had him at a certain point, Rich, having won 1, 2, 3, 4, 6, 7. Yeah, I guess it was through that win on Senior Prank, the maiden of Chad's. He had won 9 of 15 starts.
Wow, that's strong. He's riding great. Physically, I think Manny's always been one of the most gifted riders in the entire country. I mean, he's an athlete. He's physically very strong. At times, I don't think the mental aspect of the game has caught up to the physical aspect of the game, but I think you can safely say that's not the case, the way he's been riding. Sometimes when you're so physically strong, you tend to rely on that more than tactics and your mind. I know there were times that I did. And when you're riding your best, it's a balance of both being extremely smart and then obviously having the physical tools. But you know, it's funny. We were talking. I'm not working a lot this month, so I was on the show Friday. It was the only day I worked last week, and I won six in a day once, but it was between two tracks, four at Aqueduct, two at the Meadowlands. I won five, I think four or five different times in a day. Although one of them, they didn't count it for some reason, because the other part of my entry had a scratch late and my horse ran for purse only, and they only credited me with the four, even though I did win that one too, not for wagering purposes. I believe on Fabersham, for Gaspar Moshera. But when a rider gets on a roll and you could feel the energy off, yeah. I interviewed him after his fifth win. It's just, and Steve, I believe this in my heart of hearts. Horses feed on energy. Mm. You know, when a barn's going good, everybody's happy. There's an atmosphere in the barn that everybody's happy, and the horses pick up on it. Same with riders. When a rider goes out, why do apprentices, 10-pound apprentices, 7-pound apprentices win on big price horses? Because they're so thrilled to be out there. And they didn't go out there beaten already going, ah, wait till I talk to my agent about putting me on this one. They go out there like, oh man, I'm going to get the most out of this horse. And they give that horse every opportunity, and they don't go in with a preconceived notion, and the horse feeds on that positive energy. And, you know, it's just when you get older and you get beat up and you've ridden thousands and thousands of races, when it happens to almost everybody. I don't really think I've ever seen a rider that was immune to it, just different levels of it. But, yeah, I mean, I just, when I talked to him right after he won the fifth, I said to him, I said, you got another one in you. And just the way he looked at me and the expression on his face, this guy's going to go and win this one too.
I always talk about my partner with the barbecue, Barry Fry. And Johnny, this was at Saratoga, and Johnny won like three of the first four or three of the first five. And Barry said, who's Velasquez on here? I said, I don't know. This so-and-so. He said, don't worry about what it looks like on paper. He said, don't bet against streaks. He said, when a guy gets out like this, he said, just bet him. And sure enough, he won at least two more. And maybe he won six that day. I can't remember.
Well, and again, you know, it's funny too, like, and I know that we slightly disagree. I do believe Jose Gomez should be champion apprentice. I mean, the guy is cast, whatever it is now.
He's going to win.
I think that he actually went into a bit of a funk in the fall. And what I saw was a young guy that was tired. You know, working all summer, every morning, you know, especially Saratoga, you're up at 5 every morning, you're working. And then he was doing a lot of double duty, going on days off to parks. And I just really think physically he hit the wall for a period before he kind of started coming back out of it more recently. And it's kind of unfortunate for him that he had that lull, because I think that's the only thing that made it close, right?
Yeah, possibly. Yeah, got you. I hear it.
But it's hard, you know, like I think Dylan rode some great races this week, and Dylan Davis, he obviously won on Lugan Knight. But I see him go into lulls, and to me, I think it's more a mental fatigue with him, because he's not a guy who has to watch his weight or anything. And I wish that guys could own it and, you know, maybe have those conversations. I know I couldn't when I was riding, and go to your agent and say, listen, I'm just beat, man. I'm banged up. I'm tired. I just need a week, or I need a little bit of a lighter load for, you know, a week or so to get back to where I need to be. But, you know, it's not a team sport. You don't have a contract. It's just such a hard thing for riders to do and admit, even to themselves. But it's just hard. It's there's no season. It's 365, yep. You know, 24/7 basically. And, but I think also there's a part of it that you don't want to own up or admit that maybe, you know, it's almost like a pride thing. Nah, I'm tough. I can handle, I can do it, you know. And it's honestly, you'd be better served if you just recognized it and talked about it more.
Well, and how much of that, I mean, not to go off in this direction, but it is worth a follow-up on the topic. How much of that, Rich, is nutrition? And you talk about Dylan being a natural lightweight. We think of Tony, but guys like you and the other Michael McCarthy, they have to be very careful. Lafitte Pinquet, there's plenty of the majority of guys that their natural weight based on their size would be like where you are now. I mean, in the 140 range. So how much of it is actual when you say mental fatigue versus physical fatigue? Even the mental fatigue is a symptom or evidence of the physical fatigue of not having enough food in your system.
You know, I think it manifests itself differently in everybody. Like my experience, Steve, was that I could will my way through it physically. And I'm going to tell you now, I can own it now. It doesn't matter anymore. But I ride every race in the day, right? And you go, they check for the first, you weigh out, the valet takes your saddle, you go back to your locker and all of your homework's done. But you just refresh yourself right before you go out with all your notes and your racing form. So you sit on the bench, you're looking down, and then you go, okay, rider's out for the first race. And I'd stand up, and a wave of dizziness would hit me, and I'd purple spots, and I'd go out there and ride like a banshee, come back, out for the second race, same thing. It was all day. Now, like I said, I could will myself through it physically. Where I broke down was mentally. I said things to people, and I would go off on things that I don't even know why they bothered me now. Like if I thought somebody said something that was dumb, I had no filter. I was going to tell them how dumb it was. And it didn't matter who it was. It was owners, trainers. Catfish Smith, who owned the horse Hillsdale years ago. I'm riding all his horses for Dennis Bryder. We had some nice horses too. Melody of Spring and nice horses. I won a bunch of races for him. I'm on my last horse of the morning. It's like 10 o'clock. I know I got to get to the jockey's room and lose some weight in the hot box. And him and Dennis pulled up, and Smitty was a character, and he had played NFL football. He was on a championship team before there was the Super Bowl. He was missing a finger because he had them cut it off because he got stomped on, so he didn't have to come out of the game. This guy was like larger than life. And he pulls up and he goes, hey, boy, I got another one for you to get on. And this is a guy I'm riding all his horses, loved me. And I basically flipped him off, told him, I got your boy right here. lost the whole barn. Dennis called me. He says, the guy loves you. Why? I said, boy, F him. I'm going nuts. Because mentally, I wasn't in the right frame of mind to handle things that I thought, were BS, I guess. I don't know. But, Lafitte, I think, always was able to will himself through it physically. And mentally, he would be, like, real quiet and intimidating in the room. And I've said this to his son, Lafitte, who I work with, who I love. And I said, man, your dad was intimidating. Not many guys intimidated me, but, man, I always kind of tiptoed around him. And he goes, yeah, me too. and then I do think there are guys that maybe did the physical part of it and they're able to maintain that the mental part of it. It's just hard. It's just constant. There's no breaks. You don't see a rider win the Kentucky Derby and they're going, where are you going now? Disney World. No, I'm flying back to California or New York to ride or wherever, there's no moment to rest in your laurels. When I won my 3,000th, I was so happy. The kids were there, Carmella. And I really just wanted to go home and have a nice dinner with the family. It was like a moment of reflection. 3,000 wins. I mean, I remember being on the farm as a kid and a jock came from Suffolk and everybody was abuzz that he was there to work horses and he had won 300 races in his career in Suffolk. And I was thinking, man, if I could ever do that, and not to belittle what he did, but so like the point is the enormity of the 3,000 and I had to go get on a plane and fly to California to ride the Matriarch. And I, And I remember being on the plane just wishing I could have gone home and enjoyed that moment with the family. But that's not a rider's life. That's just not how the game is played. So you just, you know it, and you keep on, you know, going forward, putting your head down and trudge on through.
Yeah, that's I'm glad we touched on this, because it's one of those topics that, actually I was going to say that private citizens, quote unquote, wouldn't relate to, but, or wouldn't understand, but I'm going to say that that's not true. I'm going to say that probably there's different degrees of experience with that kind of a scenario, which includes, frankly, it includes recovered alcoholics, what's known as dry drunks that, get angry and surly, as something of a reaction, and any number of, there isn't anybody that hasn't carried, some either frustrations from work home or frustrations from home to work.
Well, this is one thing that I think my children really helped me with. Once, you have kids, you got to think outside yourself. Before that, you're very selfish. Your work, your what you do, it's everything, every moment. And then, it gets to a point where one day I got home and had a tough day, rode a bunch, tired, probably hurting a little bit physically. And you look at your son, he doesn't want to know all about that. He doesn't care about that. Dad's home. He's excited. He wants to have a catch in the backyard. So you learn to be, basically, I learned anyway. And it took, until my kids were of an age where, you're doing stuff with them, going for a bike ride or going to the park or having a catch in the backyard, where you have to be able to leave it behind and put it aside. And it used to frustrate Carmela to no end, because her and I could have it's terrible argument about something, usually probably my fault, something stupid, that because I was starving, I made bigger than it was. And as soon as I walked in that room, I was like a snake shedding his skin. I didn't think about it, not one second. And then we'd have an awful fight, and I'd go out and win three or four, and she'd be like, it doesn't bother you. No. As soon as I walked through that plane, I'm a different guy. I'm not, honestly, I was never a guy that, if anything, the room was my sanctuary in that respect. I could get away from anything else that was bothering me. I got in the room, and I didn't think about it again until after I left that room. And that was just, I think, probably part and parcel that I've been, was doing this since I'm a baby, basically. I mean, I started riding so young. And I was thinking about this. Since I'm 14 years old, I've made my living in the game. From the time I was 14, every paycheck I've gotten in my life was from the racetrack.
Yeah.
And listen, I know how blessed I am. That still continues to this moment, that I'm still making a living because of horses, because of thoroughbred racing. I want to say blessed. I don't want to say lucky. I know how blessed I am.
Well, Nick Zito at this point would interject and say, you're lucky and blessed.
All right, well, I'll take it. I mean, sometimes you better be lucky than smart, right?
Lucky and blessed. Well, we're in trouble because I know you got to go, and I got to get. I have to get to Christoph. He's going to tell us about the very nice filly. Somebody told me. Oh my God, who was it that told me? Somebody told me they've got. They said you've got to hear Blank's Christoph Clement imitation. That it's like uncanny. Who was?
Oh, there are a few out there.
I can't remember who it was. Whoever it was, who was it that told me? They heard me do one of those little riffs, and they said, "Oh, you should hear." Do Christoph. It's funny. But I got to get to him. But I want to mention Law Professor. What a nice job Atrus has done here.
really has. Wow, the horse, he was very, very good, and obviously he looks like he's ready for a bigger game.
It might be. And, you know, coming out of the Dirt Mile, and there'll be others, obviously, Cyberknife included, who, in fact, I think bulleted, if I didn't, right, at Fairgrounds, I think, on Saturday.
Yeah. I got to be honest, full disclosure, I'm not as in tune. I don't work again until this Sunday, then I don't work again until the 28th. So I'm not. I'm not watching the way I normally do.
All right. So you're treading a little water. All right. You're taking this is like a January thaw for you.
Yeah, and I'm going to go visit with Dennis and Julia Bride. I think
nice.
The 19th to the 22nd down in Virginia. They was, you know, listen, I was a kid. I lived with them for a while and worked with horses, and very instrumental in my life and my career. So I need to go spend some time with them, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Oh, that's sweet. All right. Well, Richie, I'll catch up later in the week with you. I appreciate it, and we'll talk next week.
All right, Steve. Talk to you. Bye.
Rich Migliori, everybody. There you go. As the Naira Betts weekend recap continues, we're 90 minutes in, and we're going to swing right over to Christoph, and got quite a bit for Christoph, and then Michael W. McCarthy as either promised or threatened, or both. And looking forward. I haven't talked to him. Where did I see him? Keeneland. Saw him for like 3 seconds. And as he was kind of walking, who was he? Maybe he was, CC? Maybe it was CC. Maybe it was in the Philly and Mare sprint. Right? What else would it have been? So, looking forward to catching up with Michael W. And also looking forward to having Chris join us. I did not put the sale up on the screen, so they're probably just a few hips in. There we go. Wasn't getting through to Christoph. But we have now. And Christoph Clement joins us. Christoph, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. My connection, is it possible to just speak? Can you give me like 30 seconds to have a better connection?
Yeah, you sound okay, though.
Okay. It's just because, can you hear me now?
Yeah, I could hear you before.
Okay, great. Okay, all good.
Christoph, we got a bunch of things. I'm glad I waited, though, because today, of course, things are starting up at Keeneland with the January sale. And when I saw the story late last fall that Mrs. Generazio was going to disperse, I really was kind of saddened.
I agree. It's been a real feature of the New York program and the New York Bred program, and they've been very successful at it without putting much money into it, just using common sense and, you know, being very reasonable, and that good enchères such as Discreet Park, Disco Partner, Pure Sensation, Two Markets, and so on. I never trained more than 3 or 4 enchères for them, but they were very, really, really good owners for us.
Not that you couldn't necessarily have had success with turf sprinters, but it seems like some of their horses kind of came at a good time for your barn, because the advent and the proliferation of turf sprinting in New York kind of coincided. And pure sensation was Pure Sensation first.
I think so. And Pure Sensation was a very nice 2 years old. And he got beat first time out. I couldn't believe he got beat because he trained so well. And I was very, very disappointed the day he finished second to a fast horse of Todd Pletcher. I forgot his name. Pure Sensation had a great career afterwards. I could not believe he got beat first time out. But he was a wonderful sprinter with like true speed. I mean, like amazing speed, you know. And for some strange reason, he adored the parks. I mean, he won 5, 6, or 7 times the stakes at Parks.
Right.
I'm not exactly sure why. He loved it over them. He was a really good horse.
Well, it's not necessarily a place that turf sprinting the turf over there is, it doesn't get all that much use. So he took advantage. But Discreet Mark, she was around the same time too.
Yeah, no, she was a very nice filly. She won. What did she win? She won the I think she won the Delmar Oaks, correct?
Did she win the Oaks?
She won the Delmar Oaks for the Garden City, but she won with some.
She did. She did.
Yeah,
she did win the Delmar Oaks, and she was second. Yeah. She was second in the Garden City.
Okay, so that's it. Very nice filly. Nice filly. She was a precocious 2 years old. She came down. She had speed. I read Ortiz used to ride her for us. And they put her, like, you know, close to the pace. I think Le Parou rode her in Del Mar. And it was a lovely filly. Then we sold. And I sold her to Moglen Stud. So she went to Europe. And she had a filly was great replaced last year. And they've got a 2 year old, I think, by Galileo at Avon.
Wow.
That they're very excited about. So we'll see what happened there.
How about that?
Or maybe the Galileo was a 3 year old. I can't remember. But they bred her to the best. She passed away, unfortunately, last year. But they will keep some fillies out of her, so hopefully the legacy will carry on.
Well, and I do have to ask, I mean, is Patricia, is she going to keep any in training until they finish off their... No? Everything's going.
No, everything is going. She was just going to sell a mare, and then she changed her mind, and she just decided that because, you know, it's overwhelming, she's on her own, Mr. Genazio is not here anymore, and she's an older lady, and it just... So she did... People don't realize, but they did everything on their own. They had no advisor, so they did every decision was made by Mr. and Mrs. Generazio, the bookkeeping, everything was done just by them. And, you know, she's an older lady, and she just decided to enjoy life a little bit more.
I'm going to have to reach out to Jimmy Ryerson as well, because, you know, it's amazing to me, Christoph. They were one of those outfits, and, you know, and Frank trained his own for a good long while, and then it seemed like, when he stepped aside, not that he couldn't have trained these horses to stakes, you know, graded stakes success, but it did seem like everything kind of coalesced, you know, just at a perfect time, and all the work they put in elevated them, and you know, Frank, until his passing, was enjoying it immensely, and whenever, you know, I actually watched, we were in California for one of those Breeders' Cup Turf sprints. And I maybe Disco Partner, maybe, and I actually watched it with Patricia, and of course got off to a bad start and never really, you know, the race was over early, but they've enjoyed it, and they've had a protracted success in the game. She'll be terribly missed. And those silks, who's going to get those silks? They're majestic.
I don't know. It's just Mr. Generazio's choice was. You know, unfortunately, I mean, it's sad, but I mean, I think, as I spoke to her yesterday about it, and, you know, she can enjoy the legacy of some of these horses on the track, and she can follow them on the track.
No doubt. Well, the influence will be felt for a long time, undoubtedly. Patricia Generazio and 52 or 54 head will go through the ring over the next few days.
When Mr. Genazio passed away, she had 130 horses altogether.
Wow.
And I helped her to get the number down. But still, you know, when you own mares, it goes up quickly because you've got winlings and yearlings and the mares mm-hmm. and the field on the track. And it's a little bit of an issue. And they've been great colors. They're very, you know, a very well-known colors in New York because we all know the horses. And we just turned the page, and hopefully some people will be lucky buying some of these mares. And hopefully some of them will come back in the New York Red program. It's a great program, and the more help, the better, because we need some horses in New York.
Well, and of course, Mary Hartman had success. You think of Precious Passion, Tune Me In, Pure Sensation, Disco Partner, Discreet Mark, as we discussed. A lot of great ones. They won the UN. They won the Clement Hirsch with Precious Passion. Won the UN a couple of different times, actually. The Del Mar Oaks that you mentioned.
From all the horses that I train, they were the better one, you mentioned them. The one who at one stage was outstanding for like a year to a year and a half because he had the most extraordinary turn of foot was Disco Partner.
Mm-hmm.
And when Ivan Ortiz bought him, he had an extreme, you know, amazing amount of confidence in him. And that horse, when he was right, just like the most remarkable turn of foot. I mean, he just spectacular ton of foot. And he's a stallion now in New York. And it would be great. Hopefully, he will be able to pass on that ton of foot. If he does, then he will be a major force to be reckoned with.
Well, I mean, if he has the same kind of influence that his sire, that Disco Rico had, when he went to stud, that was what we kind of talked about, that he could take up the mantle of Disco Rico, you know, who was plagued with a bad hoof for the late stages of his stud career. But Disco partner out of a numerous mare, Lulu's number. Unbelievable. Well, I'm saddened by this, but we thank the Generazios for years and years of contribution to the game. And speaking of owners, husband and wife owners that are having just protracted success, let's talk about the Reeves's, Christoph, because they had a mammoth year in 2022 and started off the year well.
And absolutely, it's the same story. You know, I don't train all the horses, I just train some of the horses.
Right.
But we've been very lucky for them, I believe. We won like 15 stakes in 2022 for them, including five with City Man, five with a sprinter called Big Invasion. It's been a great honor to have in the barn. You know, Mr. and Mrs. Reeves are very game. When they see the right horse, you know, they go and get it. They've got a very good team around them. We've got Stephen Hillen in Europe. We've got Mr. Gladwell here in America. Top team, great, you know, very good owner. He knows what it takes to win races, and the whole thing is clicking and it's working.
It's remarkable. And in terms of the sheer number, you mentioned the 15. Then there's Danny Gargan, and then there's George Weaver, and they've had a hand. Dave Grenig did, and it was your conversation with Dave several weeks ago that opened Dave's eyes, and he went looking, and he added up, I think, 21 or 22 stakes that the Reeveses had a hand in last year.
Yeah, but that's a remarkable year, which is, so there's a good news and a bad news. The good news is it's a remarkable number. Let's enjoy it. The bad news, we are in 2023, so we have to try to do the same, which is not easy.
I love it. Well, Christoph, let's talk about City Man for a minute. And what a
nice
horse.
He's a lovely horse, you know.
Yeah.
He's won stakes every year of his age. It's not like he's a new horse or whatever. He's been a good horse from the beginning. He was winning on dirt early on, then we switched him to the grass. He's not just a good New York bred stake horse. He's actually a good horse. Was good enough to win in Open Company and in the New York Bred Company. It was impressive the other day at Gulfstream with the training for the Pegasus. Ambitious, but it's the right time of the year to be ambitious, and we'll see what happens.
He's, you know, he had just turned six now, and he beat your own Decorated Invader, we should mention.
Correct. He's also a nice horse. He struggled a little bit after his three-year-old life to get him back. But we gained plenty of time, and I thought that was actually a very good race from the Decorated Invader.
Yeah, one thing that's notable too about City Man, you mentioned, you know, he's won every year, he's won a stake, he's now won nine times and 26 starts, but his level of performance, and you know, even if, you know, when he doesn't win, he's always competitive, and he moves interchangeably, Christoph, between Open Company and New York Bred Company.
I try to compete in the New York Bred program because obviously it's a, you know, I mean, it's a gift type of thing, so it's
sure.
Silly for me not to make use of it. But you don't always have a stakes every month, so you've got to adapt the program to whatever his racing career, to whatever we've got, which explains why we go in Open Company sometimes. But he's done well in Open Company, you know, He won a stakes in Saratoga. He won a stakes at Gulfstream. He finished second in another stakes in Saratoga. I mean, he's a good horse. He's a nice horse.
One thing about him, it seems, he does seem to prefer the going to be on the firmer side. Whenever he misfires, it seems like it's less than firm.
Yeah, the only thing is, in order to see that, yes, but it's just the twice when you see in the curve, softer, it was not soft. It was amazingly soft, which was the fourth Marcian and the race in Saratoga. It was not like, you know, the regular soft. It
right.
was like very, very soft. We go now. See?
Well,
but he's without a doubt better on firm, correct.
Well, City Man, and Decorated Invader, they both go into the Pegasus turf?
We're going to train them for the Pegasus. So we'll work this coming Saturday. You know, we have time to give them two works. As long as they look well and train well, then yes, the goal will be to run.
Outstanding. You know, you mentioned Big Invasion earlier, Christoph, and my friend Nathan, when he heard you were coming on, he sent me a text and asking about where you stand with Big Invasion.
Big Invasion, Mr. and Mrs. Reeves, they own a farm in Ocala, so he's there at the moment, and we plan on him to join us in the later part of January. All good.
Everything's good. All right. How about since we're also looking at some things from this, you know, the first opening couple of days here, the first 10 days of the year. What do you have in that maiden winner, that Breathe Away?
My Bated Breath. I've been very lucky with Phyllis by that stallion in the States, and I thought she was very professional the way she won yesterday.
Yeah. That's what I was curious about. How quickly will you move her along?
I don't know. Let's see how she comes out. You know, I don't like to. I usually like the horses to tell us type of thing. You know, there's a stakes like in the later part of the Gulfstream meet, going like 7.5 for a mile. She could be ideal for that. Let's just see if she comes out of the race, and then we can make a plan.
Fair enough. And you know, since that was turf, Christoph, what's your early read on that turf course, the new turf course at Gulfstream?
It's very good. It's very good. It looks great. Horses travel well on it. The jockeys are very happy. My only way is we're slightly overusing it, and I wish we were a bit more conservative with it. It's very disappointing to see some of the men claiming that you're cheaper racers on it. I think it should be safe for the better horses, because you have to bring it all the way to the Florida Derby, so we got like another almost 3 months.
Right.
And I just hope, you know, I prefer them to be more conservative for the first months, and we can always add more races as we go along. I'm a little bit worried about seeing 4 races being run on it. I just think it's going to be a long, long meet for that tough course. It's annoying because the product itself is a great product. There's no doubt about it. And I just wish they would be a bit more conservative with it. That's all.
Well, fair enough. Before I ask you about some other stake horses, how about some other, you know, you've been firing off the maiden winners very steadily here since the winter got started. Long Live the Queen, going back to Christmas Eve, and Dr. Oseran.
Yeah, they've all won. I mean, Dr. Oseran could be a nice turf sprinter in the making. Long Live the Queen won at Tapita. I'm not exactly sure what that means, but she's a New York bride. We might wait for New York April to bring her back. And also won at Tampa Bay with a filly called Lightress of the West Point. Was impressive, going a mile on the grass. And she could be a nice filly going even further than a mile.
What about that Sbagliato?
Very nice off. Such complicated mentally, physically. He's not finished yet. He's still very, very immature, both mentally and physically. But he's got plenty of talent. He's very well bred. He's by quality vote. Top class mare. He's a home bred for Bobby Flay. And I like him. I think he's got the making of a very nice horse. We just have to be sure we put all the pieces of the puzzle together.
Speaking of homebreds for Bobby Flay, Pizza Bianca is back from the West Coast trip.
Correct. She's back. She's having a little bit of a break at the moment, and then we'll put her back in training later on this month.
Excellent. So we'll see her in a little bit. What about, speaking of stake horses, what about Acoustic Avenue?
He's having a break. He went back to Mr. Reeves' farm, and you know, we'll bring him back in the spring in New York.
Excellent. And the Breeders' Cup type horses and others. I guess we've hit on most of them, right?
Yeah, I've got a nice horse called Splitstream, who's on his way back. I like him. He could be a nice horse. Pizza Bianca is having a break. Big Invasion will be on his way back in training by the later part of January. City Man we talked about. Decorated Invader we talked about.
Right.
I've got a few horses who came from Europe, including 2 very exciting filly. One of them named Manatat was a very nice 3-year-old filly who finished 5th or 6th in the Breeders' Cup Mile Turf. She's with us now and we like us. We'll see what happens. But you know, all these horses, instead of me telling you where to come back, I just train them and according to the, or quickly they get Americanized and we decide how quickly to bring them back.
Well, one more. You've only got one horse that's entered for this week. That's Swashbuckle, another New York bred that you got down in Florida.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, some of the cheaper New York breds, sometimes it's tough to wait 5 or 6 months to bring them back. And we decided to run him. He's doing great. I mean, it's an aggressive move. He probably will be the favorite of that race. Dolph is doing very well, and the idea is to try to win. And if we lose him, we lose him. That's the name of the game.
No, that's for Jump Sucker, and they certainly know how to play it. And this is actually a homebred of theirs. And this is coming up on Friday in the fourth race. Well, Chris, this was terrific. Reiterate that sad about the Generazio name and colors leaving the sport, but we wish Patricia the best and hope, and I imagine, that her bloodstock will be one of the highlights of the sale the next 4 days. And it's always a highlight talking to you. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Happy New Year. Thank you.
Happy, healthy, bye-bye. Christophe and everybody. The Clement Barn, of course. You can follow Chris and his whole team on Twitter. Right? Although, you know, now that I say that, I don't think I've seen as much Clement content as I did, right? I think his daughter was running it. But I really have not noticed as much Clement racing stuff. There was a period, yeah, where he was very. I wouldn't think of Christophe as, you know, prolific, you know, controversial type, you know, courting controversy. The way some tweeting trainers do, and I admire his the individual in question. Let's reach out for Michael W. McCarthy, and then, as was suggested, and as we kind of thought was going to happen, John White is going to return to the airwaves, and he'll do it in hour three. Right now, Michael W. McCarthy returns to the airwaves. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you guys. Thanks for having me on.
It's my pleasure. I told everybody, you patted me on the shoulder and whizzed on by Breeders' Cup paddock at Keeneland. I think that was maybe CC, but good to catch up with you, especially in the wake of Lugan Knight's invasion of Aqueduct and the Jerome Wynn. Congratulations.
Yeah, that was great. Great performance. Of course, he kind of been touting himself all along. His first out race was very good. Obviously, as you know, second race when he broke his maiden at Keeneland, found out a little bit about him. He could overcome some adversity. His race prior to the Jerome at Churchill, not sure what to make of that there. It looked like he got lost a little bit coming through the quarter pole and re-engaged the top two finishers there inside the 16th pole and galloped out well. It was always in the back of my mind just to try to stretch him out to see if that was something that he was going to be capable of doing. The Jerome, we liked the spacing and all that sort of thing. He put up a pretty good fight on Saturday and came out on the winning end. So very, very, very proud of him.
Well, and you know, I had Rich Migliori earlier, and you know, I said to Mig, I mean, what would Jose Lascano have to have done differently on the Broman and Linda Rice favorite, Arctic Arrogance? And Richie kind of agreed there wasn't anything. Lugan Knight was not, and Dylan were not letting him by.
That's what it seemed like to me. And as I've mentioned, yet you hate to feel confident, but it always looked like the horse kind of had his measure. That doesn't happen very often, but it was one of those things that I just thought as they were getting near the wire, he's, you know, if he was going to pass him, he would have done so already. So super game performance. You know, we'll let the horse kind of dictate where we go from here. I was semi-suspicious about getting a mile. Don't know how suspicious I am about trying to get a mile and an eighth now or just waiting until something. I believe the Gotham is a one-turn mile again, waiting until the Gotham. So it's good to have options. It's good to have a horse like him that makes some noise.
Well, and the difficult part of that equation, and I'm glad you brought it up without me, you know, bugging you about distance limitations, because this happens to be the first foal out of Sly Roxy, the Spitestown dam, and she herself is out of the wonderful Roxy Gap, who was also a 7/8 type.
Yeah, the pedigree side of it sort of is top and bottom fast. So to be able to stretch your speed out like that, you know, is certainly a plus. I would hate to get a little overzealous with him and think that, you know, a mile and an eighth is something that he would have no problem handling. He does not look like a typical two-turn type horse, strong horse, big horse, well put together. But his attitude is probably what makes him, you know, amenable to doing something like a one-turn mile.
Well, and of course, by Golden Sense, and you've, you know, between your own career and your preparation for your career, working out of the Pletcher barn, you certainly have seen plenty of three-year-olds like this. Is that a fair statement? Who does he remind you of?
I couldn't tell you who he really reminds me of at the moment, you know. So many of those horses we had during my time at Todd's were classic types that were winning these sort of races. So it'd be hard to put my finger on just a horse. I'd have to think about it because there were so many of them. But, you know, it's an exciting time of year. It's still early in the year for some of these Derby preps. Who knows? Maybe if we come back in the Gotham and he were to run well again in the Gotham, maybe we'd be forced to try to some sort of a two-turn effort somewhere. For right now, I'm just kind of thinking still the one turn option is might be best for him.
Sure. Well, and I mean, I guess I can bring up Spitestown, right? You were around for Spitestown.
Exactly. Certainly was around for Spitestown and a little bit of the same kind of demeanor, very laid back, very smart, take good care of themselves. And obviously like Spitestown, loves a good fight.
How, in terms of his development, I mean, it feels like he's, you know, kind of come along right on time, debuted in September. It took the second start at Keeneland to break through, and he actually beat a nice horse in that Carcano. Then you get, you know, frankly, you compliment that optional claiming group, that allowance group at closing weekend to Churchill, because of course you're now the second stake winner out of the race that produced Victory Formation. In terms of his development, and fold in BG Stables into this equation.
Everything's gone according to plan with him. He's had no real setbacks, which is nice. Hate to jinx myself, but he's been pretty healthy up to this point. Very pleased that George Yeager was nice enough to go ahead and capitalize on the Kentucky Purse Structure program and sent this horse back to us that way. You know, he was a horse that just went about his business all the time, did everything you asked him, go as fast as you like, go as slow as you like. So he's taken it all in stride, and looks like he's got a good head on his shoulders. You know, George Yeager, we've been lucky for him back there in Kentucky. We had another nice Philly-friendly persuasion win in a big way at Keeneland for him in the fall, and she'll make her way back. But George is a great guy. I've been a big patron of California racing, and glad that he was able to go ahead and kind of spread his wings and send us a few in Kentucky.
Well, and you sort of wrote your own next question follow-up, because Michael, you are really far flung right now between the Kentucky operation and the California operation. You're running them at Golden Gate and Santa Anita, and you're taking advantage of that, you know, newborn, reborn Turfway Park program.
Yeah, I think Kentucky's a very good option. They ride a few races there at Turfway, mile and eighth and what have you. We get a little bit pigeonholed out here in California. Don't see too many dirt races over a flat mile. And I thought Kentucky was a good option for some of these horses. You've got a robust two-year-old program, turning three program back there as well. So Kentucky's been a great outlet for us. Obviously, you know, bookended by Keeneland. You always like to go ahead and participate there. If you're winning at Keeneland, you always know you're doing something right. So having a second string somewhere else was always in the back of my mind. It's worked out well. My assistant, Justin Curran, does a very good job back there. So it's been a nice addition, and hopefully we can kind of bulk our numbers up a little bit back there in the spring.
Well, and you know, there's something interesting about you know, the way in which you're positioned, because when you look at your weekend, there was Paroli winning on Friday at Golden Gate, breaking a maiden on the Tapita, and then the ability to then, you know, shift maybe horses moving up to Kentucky for Turfway. You've got that as an option, and you did run Shifty's Halloyd in the preview, came away third in there on Saturday.
Yeah, that was great. Horse was back off a quick rest, ran a bang up race for 50 about 8 days prior. So to come back and be able to pick up an extra 12,000, 15,000 to run third in the stake the other day was just a little bit of a bonus. As Chris Vaccaro and River Card Stable, those guys had a horse with me out here in California that was previously trained by David Jacobson, so I had a little bit of a relationship there with Chris. He was certainly game to give it a try over the weekend. I thought the horse put up a valiant effort. Go from there.
Well, we'll watch for what basically the Battaglia. You're going to do that kind of a route?
We'll see. We'll see. I'd like to go ahead and knock out that first level allowance condition with him, or second level allowance condition, but we'll see. We'll find a spot for him.
Let's catch up on some things that happened while I was on vacation, Christmas to New Year's, and the Bobby Frankel winner as favorite, Queen Goddess with Johnny. Great way to end the year.
Yeah, that was super performance by her. We obviously had high expectations for her last year. American Oaks was rained off the turf, and she put up a superb performance going a mile and a quarter on the dirt. Spacing wise, couldn't really find anything that fell into schedule for her last year. We tried her on the dirt in the Azari, just didn't work out for us. But she came back and was won a grade three on the turf here at an added furlong race, so that was great. This year, we obviously, we're excited to get her back. She was sold in the process. Gary Barber now owns a large interest in her. So the Frankel, that was my first winner for Gary Barber, although he's had pieces of horses with us in the past, but first real winner. So that was exciting for us. You know, bunch of options. You've got the Pegasus Filly and Mare Turf and some of these longer races on the grass for fillies and mares in the spring of 2023.
Well, and you mentioned Gary, you know, who had kind of a quiet first half of 2022, but really has kind of gotten on a roll and won a hatful of races, you know, late in the fall and into the winter here early. Had another stake winner over the weekend, maybe two actually, now that I'm thinking about it. So certainly nice to get that pink jacket into your rotation.
Yeah, I mean, he's with the volume of horses he has, it's only a matter of time before a guy like him gets on a pretty good roll. He plays at all ends of the game, claiming, stakes, buying, selling. A guy like him that supports the game, you always want to do some good for.
Exactly right. Let me ask you, too, about, because I was at the Starlet, and what is her name? The Starlet filly.
Uncontrollable.
Thank you.
Uncontrollable.
There we go.
Yeah. Nice filly. Calbred won off of a handful of works. First time out at Del Mar, which was great. Came back and had a little bit of a minor setback, which was kind of got in our way and got her healthy for the Starlet. I thought her performance there off of an abbreviated work tab was good. Looks like we'll go ahead and aim towards something like the Lost Virginess at a flat mile here on the 28th of January, which is Pegasus Day.
Excellent. And since we're talking some young horses, what about Wound Up?
Wound Up obviously was Nice to get his maiden broke first time out at Del Mar. Been a little bit disappointing since. Ran in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. First time on the dirt. First time two turns. Paul Redham is kind of the ultimate sportsman. He's certainly game to go ahead and take a swing. It just didn't work out for us that day. He's a horse that definitely does not like the dirt. I thought bringing him back at Golden Gate Fields, going a mile there, would answer a lot of questions for us, and it did. Not only does he not like the dirt, he doesn't like going a mile. But so we're just going to go ahead and try to find a nice grass allowance race here and see if we can get him back on the winning track. He's a horse that always trains like he's got some ability.
Excellent. Well, you know, part of the exercise is finding out what they, you know, what they want to do, what they can do, what they can't do. And I suppose you're in that same mindset with Malibu Coast.
Certainly. Horse who trained well here. The Eddie Logan, I thought, was a little bit of a sneaky good race. He's a funny horse to ride. He only offers as much as you ask. So he needs to be put in the game and kept in the game. I think it was the first time Frankie had ever sat on him. So we'll look for an allowance race here in the next condition book. And I would imagine he'd kind of surpass that condition, he's almost out of conditions, because I don't think you're going to find a two other than for straight three-year-olds here. So he's kind of pigeonholed in some of these stakes for right now. But he's a horse with plenty of ability and plenty of upside.
Well, speaking of ability, and I was curious, and I looked up to see where you were with Duvet Day, and I thought maybe the way she finished the year, Michael, you were going to back off a little bit, but she worked yesterday, so you're going on with her.
Worked yesterday. She'll run in the Astra. That's a mile and a half. She's sort of a one-pace, stamina-laden type mare. She'll get her chance to run a mile and a half here and see what happens. She'll probably get a little bit of a short rest after that, but and maybe even find her way to Kentucky late in the spring, summertime campaign. But a true stare, a mile and an eighth isn't enough. A mile and a quarter, I thought she was pretty even, but at a mile and a half, I think that's probably her best game. So we'll give her one more shot. See if she can get some black type on her resume and go from there.
Well, a lot of people probably said that they'll never fall in love again after she tailed off, but we'll say a little prayer that she'll walk on by as I reel off as many Burt Bacharach songs as I can think of.
Yeah, that's right. That's very good. That's pretty impressive.
Well, it's, you know, it's professional radio hosting kind of material. Michael, who's left in that barn among the now turned 3-year olds that you're waiting to debut or bring back?
I can't say there's any off the top of my head. I thought this horse Navy Man that ran the other day in a mile maiden special way here, a little bit of a funny ride. Kind of didn't expect to find him on the lead, and that's exactly where he was. And then didn't expect him to come off the fence and let a horse that he had pinned down inside of him off the fence and up to his throat latch. So kind of a strange trip. Horse sort of faltered late in the game and then kind of looked like he rallied back inside the eighth pole. So we'll change some tactics up next time, see if we can go ahead and get his maiden broke. But he's a horse that acts like he's got a lot of promise. Got another horse that's coming to California that was unplaced in the Turfway Park going a mile on New Year's Day, named Uncle Reg, who acts like he's got some ability. So we'll get him out here and try to find a good spot for him. But as far as any heavy head 3-year-olds, can't say there's any of them at the moment. But you know, you got to keep trying. And they develop, you know, at their own pace, and sometimes they sneak up on you. Kind of like Ron Bauer did.
There you go.
We'll see what happens.
You know who this is an obscure horse, but it going back to Saturday, because I was involved in the card, and I thought that Four Flag had a little bit of a clever long shot look in there. And he's got kind of a pattern, you know, for those, you know, sheet players. He had a bit of a glance, I thought, and there's something there.
hard horse to get a read on. I thought backing him up and down the hill just off his series of races was going to be a good move.
Yeah.
He was plenty sharp, obviously not sharp enough. He was never able to get close to the lead. Basically put in a mild run through the lane, just not fast enough to keep up with those types. He's a tricky horse. He doesn't wow you when he trains. He's his own worst enemy at times. I think once he stretches out back to a mile, he should be just fine.
It took a long time to break his maiden, and so it felt like one of those horses that, you know, once they break that maiden, things kind of fall in place for him.
It took a long time to break his maiden. Might take a long time to win his second start. That's just kind of him. He's a little bit frustrating. He's got the tools. He just, on his day, doesn't seem like he really wants to put it all together. So I don't want to say he'll win by accident, but he's definitely good enough to hurdle that first level condition. But he's a little tricky at times.
Well, Michael, nice start to the year. You send the Lugan Knight to New York and come away with a Jerome. Lots of other stars in the barn as the winter starts to really get rolling. Always a pleasure. Happy, healthy, and we'll see you soon.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure. Michael W. McCarthy, everybody. MWM. We covered it all. And I was going to say, we're going to take the break here, come back for hour three, and the highly anticipated and timely return of John White to the airwaves. Looking forward to it. We can talk Eclipse Awards with John. He is voted on, God knows how many. Certainly knows the ins and outs, the challenges that arise, and some of the years when there's oddball candidacies and kind of funny groups of horses. But we're going to catch up on everything with John, and I can't wait. You can hear the smile in my voice, and you'll hear the very familiar dulcet tones of John White himself when we return